Get ready for two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Dave Palumbo, John Romano. RxMuscle.com presents Heavy Muscle Radio. Watch out, this hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Heavy Muscle Radio. I'm John Romano, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and partner in crime, Dave Palumbo. Dave, this is a historic Heavy Muscle Radio episode, as it is the very first Heavy Muscle Radio that I am live in the studio with you for the duration.
Live from New York. It's Heavy Muscle Radio.
We're going live, as Jimmy DeBull would say.
Are we allowed to use that, Jeff? Live from New York?
You just did, so if we get sued, thank you.
All right. Just checking. Before we start the show, John, I got to put another thank you out there. I know we did it on After Hours, but I want to do it again. Brutal Alchemy stepped up to the plate, and our sponsor is sponsoring all our coverage of the 2009 Olympia weekend that will be sponsored by Brutal Alchemy, one of our new sponsors at the site. Not only are they supporting us monthly, but they also jumped on board to make sure that Jimmy the Bull and the entire Whack Pack are able to go to the Olympia and cover it in all our grand splendor that we always do. So we're going to have Jimmy the Bull out there. Jeff the producer will be making a trip out there. Yourself, myself, Nick the Stick will be out there.
Sean,
Big Sean Andros will be there, and Dan Ray. So we're going to have quite a crew out there, and it's all thanks to Brutal Alchemy, so I can't thank them enough.
Not only do I want to thank them for that, but I want to thank them for having such a cool name. Brutal Alchemy is awesome, and it certainly fits us really well, and I'm glad we have them along. I'm glad we were able to come to terms, and man, for them to really step up and make sure that we were all at the Olympia was probably one of the nicest, most industry productive things anyone's done in quite a while.
Yeah, and we didn't have to ask; they came to us, and that's really what I'm thanking them for.
Even better.
Now, speaking of Olympia coverage, you know, we have I think we're down to 5 weeks now, or something like that, or 4 weeks before the Olympia. The battles are heating up already. People are talking smack. I actually heard Jay Cutler, I believe it was in Flex Magazine, basically stating that he doesn't think that Dexter Jackson can beat him.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really a pretty bold statement on his part, yeah.
Well, you know, I really, because I like both of those guys tremendously, but, you know, for Jay, I'd like to see him go out on top. It's always, you know that there's not that many Olympias left in the guy. I mean, he's been competing every year for quite some time now, and if he's going to retire, if that's in his, foreseeable future, it would be nice for him to be able to go out as Mr. Olympia, as all the other ones have, except for Samir. It would be a nice thing for him. I hope he can walk the talk.
I don't know. I have a feeling if he wins, that'll just be more inspiration for him to come back and try it again. So
probably.
I don't know. Look, the Olympia is definitely up for grabs this year. There's no doubt about that. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I really believe it's Kai Greene's show to dictate whether he wins or loses. If he comes in 100%, I say he's very hard to beat. If he doesn't, I think then the door is open. Now you have the door open for a possible repeat by Dexter Jackson. If Phil Heath steps up to the plate and brings a better package, he can snag that. I think that this is an exciting time in bodybuilding because it might not be the best group of bodybuilders ever to compete on an Olympia stage, but it's going to be the most exciting due to the fact that we don't know who's going to win.
Yeah, that definitely adds an air of excitement to it. But I don't know. I disagree. It's been a long time. I think everybody's memory has been pretty much relaxed a little bit from back in the 90s when we had the likes of Cormier and Flex Wheeler and Kevin Lavroni and Dory and all.
Ronnie Coleman,
even Sean Ray.
Nasser El-Sambadi.
Yep, even to a lesser degree. It's people's memories fade, you know, and there was a big gap from then until now where we've got such a rich, deep field of incredible guys competing. And you're right, it's wide open. This is Kai Greene's Olympia to lose, and we have a tremendous front row up there consisting of not only Kai and Jay and Dexter, but you've also got you know, as you mentioned, you got Phil Heath in there. You've got Victor Martinez in there. You've got Dennis Wolf can do damage. Branch Warren even can upset things in the top five. There's a lot of good guys that if they all come in shape, it's going to be one of those Olympias where you and I are going to be really, really happy we are not judges.
Yeah, but you know what? I still don't think that this show holds a candle to the year. And it was a couple of those years, but 98 comes to mind when Ronnie won for the first time, yeah, and he beat Flex Wheeler, and Nasser was third, and I believe Sean Ray was fourth. And I mean, you had some deep, and Cormier was in it. You had a deep field that year.
Right.
As well as a couple of years before that, even though Dorian was dominating in a sense, these guys were really good with the Lavronis and Nassers and Sean Rays. And I mean, there was just always top, huge mass monsters on stage that I just don't think that we have today. I still haven't seen it. This is probably the closest we've been to a top-tier Olympia in a long time, but I just don't, I don't feel that we have the same level of depth in the lineup that we had back then.
No, we don't, but that was a decade ago, and I think this is going to be really, really exciting for people going to Vegas to see the Olympia this time. It's going to be fresh in their memory to see a really impressive lineup, and while it's certainly not an Olympia of the late 90s, like you know, as you just mentioned, a field as deep as that, but it's nevertheless a deep field, and a few of these guys could come in really, really impressive and really shake things up. Plus, we're going to see things we've never seen before. We're going to see a Dexter Jackson for the first time, who hasn't competed in an entire year, who's had a year to grow and make changes. And I really think, all things being equal, it's going to be really hard for anybody to take that title away from Dexter Jackson.
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I think given the fact that Kai is the defending Arnold Classic winner, and the level of muscularity and conditioning that he displayed at that show was just mind-boggling. And even Dexter himself said that Kai is the only guy he's really afraid of.
Right.
I got to think that if this guy is very dangerous. I know Oscar Arden has got him secluded off in somewhere in Las Vegas, eating a lot of fish and training at a Gold's there. But you know, he's almost conducting like one of these boxing camps that they take the boxers to to keep them from being distracted. You know, I have a couple boxer friends, and I'm like, how come they take these guys away to the Catskill Mountains or wherever they go, Poconos, to train for 6 weeks before the fight? He's like, because we can't be sure where these guys go at night when when they're in their own home environment. You know, they go out partying and stuff. So you know, not that Kai Greene was doing that, but I think you know, he's one of these guys that the more you focus him, the better he gets as well.
Probably. And you know, he's definitely, we were talking about this in the car the other day, it is his Olympia to lose. So I think Oscar, if he's really committed to Kai Greene, as we know he is, that he would be taking every single precaution. And to have total control these last, you know, 6 weeks or so, or 8 weeks, or however long they've been out there doing this, is really critical, especially to a competitor like Kai, who needs that kind of hands-on, you know, full contact approach to contest prep. The interesting thing is, we're inside of 5 weeks and there's been no Kai Greene drama. We haven't heard any of it, you know, passing out on the treadmill, and no medical emergencies. There's been no drama. It's getting kind of boring. I hope something happens soon.
And we're not close enough yet. Wait, I'm sure something will pop up. Like he's in the hospital for a week or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, he'll create something in his mind so that he has something to overcome. You know, I think that's just how Kai, you know, works in terms of how he motivates himself to be better than he is, by creating some kind of issue in his life that he needs to surmount or surpass the obstacle to make himself better. And he will, and he'll use it, whatever, you know. It's almost like an actor on stage. He's got to find his dramatic motivation for doing what he's doing. Once he does, I think that it always makes the final story that much better too, you know, when he wins.
Oh yeah, because he had to overcome adversity, you know. Right. I mean, that was, you know, that was great last year when he passed out on the treadmill, and you know, it just from playing pass along, that story metastasized into something much bigger than it really was, you know. And I think he was really reliant on that. I thought it was a great ploy. It was almost Arnold-esque, yeah, in its the way it was brought to fruition. And I I firmly believe bodybuilding needs more of that. So, Kai, if you're out there and you're listening, we're waiting.
I'm sure Diego will make him a bad taco or something like that, and he'll get food poisoning.
If he wants to eat my taco, I have them waiting for him in the booth.
No, because then that's that tired King Kamali, I got the stomach flu excuse.
I will put plasmosis in the taco.
Speaking about plasmosis, I don't even know how this is going to segue, but you know,
be good.
We have Stan Efferding on the show a little later, John, who's professes and obviously has the lifts to back it up to be the world's strongest bodybuilder. Now, you know, Johnny Jackson and Ben White have been fighting over this title for a number of years, and we thought once and for all it was going to be settled at the Olympia this year as to who was the strongest bodybuilder. Ben proved, I guess, earlier in the year that he's the better bodybuilder, but right. Now as far as the stronger bodybuilder, it was going to come down to these two facing off against each other in Las Vegas. But Stan Efferding just turned pro July 15th at the Masters Nationals. He's put up some numbers, at least at meets, sanctioned meets, that are better than some of these, that these other guys.
Right.
So he feels that he belongs to get in. He should be in this challenge as well, because that title should be his. And I guess they're not letting him in because, you know, they had already set the challenge up prior to him turning pro. He wasn't a pro at the time, and they told him that he can do it next year. Now, this might be one of the most anticipated events that's going to be occurring at the Mr. Olympia contest. In your mind, do you think Stan should be included in this?
Yeah, you know, I think Stan has a legitimate beef, not so much as who would be the stronger bodybuilder and whether or not he's able to compete, but I think his beef really pertains to the fact that he is the world's strongest pro bodybuilder with the numbers to prove it. I mean, he's got a legitimate 2,000 something total,
right,
from sanctioned, you know, real live meets. And if you know, there's the number of powerlifting organizations out there sort of muddle the waters a little bit, makes it a little bit confusing, but he is at the top of the heap. He's the number one guy. So I could see him being a little perturbed over the fact that he's being left out of competing for a title that he already owns. So I think it's a matter of semantics. They should say that he is currently the world's strongest bodybuilder, and Johnny and Ben White are competing to really eliminate one or the other, so that one of those two guys would actually compete against Stan for the legitimate title of world's strongest pro
bodybuilder. I'm going to disagree. I'm going to tell you why. Because when two boxers face each other, until they box each other in the ring on that night, and one beats the other, that one can't claim to be the best boxer in the world. Okay? Just because we know a guy has got more speed, he's a bit harder hitter, he has more knockouts, okay, than another guy, until he faces that guy and beats him, he's not the greatest. I think that all three of these guys are going to have to face each other. If Stan at some point faces one of the winners on the Olympia stage on that particular night and defeats him, then he can be the world's strongest bodybuilder. You know, there's different conditions at different places. If Derek Pounson wants to be the world's strongest man, he's got to win the world's strongest man contest in wherever it's being held on that day. He can't just say, well, I've lifted heavier Atlas stones or I've done it quicker.
Right.
So I think that needs to be included. Having said that, do I think Stan should be included? Probably. But you know what? They did set up this whole thing between Ben and Johnny, and it is a grudge match. Let's let him do it. See who wins, and then I say, you know, put the winner up against Stan. I think I'm sure the fans won't mind to see another liftoff.
Well, that's the good thing about it, Dave, is that you know, I think looking at this competition between Ben and Johnny, I think a lot of questions on a question on a lot of people's mind is, okay, so we accomplish this, what's next? Well, now we know what's next. We got Stan Efferding standing there breathing heavy in the background, knowing that title, in his mind anyway, is probably legitimately his, and he wants to go and rightfully claim it in a more official fashion. So
right,
whether it's at the Olympia next year, or it's at the Arnold Classic, or it's at a separate meet somewhere else, you know, down the road, they have a contender for the next time that they decide to do this.
Which is good, because, you know, sometimes these things are one-shotters, you know. So hopefully there'll be another guy that steps up to the plate after that who wants to compete, you know, against these guys. So I think that's exciting. And another thing I'm really excited about is the, and I know Nick the Stick, and I know Jeff's been asking me about parties, but ALR, who is one of the, I don't know if he's the title, but one of the presenting sponsors at the Olympia, will be throwing an after party at Mandalay Bay, which I hear is going to be unbelievable. So I am sure we will be there at some point covering it and hanging out on Saturday night after the men's show is over. And it should be a long night for us.
what are the short nights? And I don't remember any short nights for us. But you know what? ALR throws the best parties. I've been going to his after parties for years now, and as you have, Dave. And I think it's going to be really exciting for the rest of the Whack Pack and our crew that haven't had the experience. I know Nick the Stick, we're probably going to have to sneak him in because I don't think he's old enough to actually get into...
give him a fake ID or something.
You have to get him a fake ID.
I will carry him in my bag.
Diego may show up too, you never know. If I'm someone can sponsor him.
I'm going to be with Good Day Mate. He's going to sponsor my trip.
I heard, is that a true story?
I'm a liar, John. I will be there with Good Day Mate.
I heard from Good Day Mate that he sent me an email and he said that he was making the trip from South Africa. He was coming to the Olympia. He was all excited. He wanted to know what he could bring me from down there. I really don't know what they have other than gold and diamonds, so I told him to take his pick.
He brought me a pen last time. It was pretty nice, actually.
A pen?
Yeah, he brought me a pen.
I was hoping for some Krugerrands or some raw diamonds or something, you know. But I would be really cool if he ended up rooming with Diego and we had Diego out there, Good Day Mate, and the rest of us. It would be
Dive, you know. It would be great, Dive.
All we need is the Smalley brothers, and it would be complete.
I think Robin Shank banned them, actually. But, you know, they did remember what happened to the Olympia last year? They did the last interview with Ben Weider before he croaked.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess someone's got it somewhere. I think ALR has got the interview somewhere.
It was at ALR's booth, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, can you imagine Ben Weider, his whole history of his life, all the dignitaries he's interviewed with and sat and ate dinner with, and the last person the last person he got interviewed with on video is Mr. G and his brother.
Well,
who he thought was Hulk Hogan.
He thought was Hulk Hogan. Right, exactly. So. But, you know, prior to that, at the Arnold Classic, Bobby Smalls interviewed Ben Weider with his shoes off.
True.
So,
with his smelly feet.
Yeah, with his smelly feet at like 2:00 in the morning at the restaurant at
Doubletree. He liked them, though. He did like them.
Of course.
He got a kick out of them.
How could you not like them? I mean, come on.
Nice.
But you know what? I'm so grateful that I got to bury the hatchet with Ben Weider before he died and had some great conversations with him, you know, privately before he died. And, you know, that we, you know, he parted this earth with me on good terms. And, you know what? We owe a lot to that guy. And to have our Smalley brothers in possession of his final interview, I think, is just the most auspicious thing for us that I could imagine having.
I'm sure if he would have lived, probably Mr. G would have taken him surfing. Don't you think?
Ben Weider riding the 100-foot wave.
Yeah, that would Mr. be G.
He would drive the jet ski, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Pull Mr. G into the wave.
Maybe. Well, we got a big show coming up this coming weekend. I know it's the Labor Day weekend right now. I've got to announce that. And we're actually off and enjoying ourselves a little bit. Building up or getting ready for the build up, which is the next 3 weeks, Atlantic City Pro, Team Universe, and then the Olympia. So, you know, I think we got three great lineups coming up. Specifically, this coming week, we got Ron Goldstein and Stokely Palmer, who will be promoting the Atlantic City Pro Show at the Trump Marina in Atlantic City. We'll be down there in full force with the entire RX Muscle Whack Pack. Funny story, you know, I know you know the story. This is just a great story. And, you know, we don't really talk about, you know, MD or Steve Bleckman anymore. But, you know, this is just a great story because, you know, Steve had never, last year when we went down there, Ron Goldstein always throws this crazy party on Friday night, you know, to celebrate all the judges and the people who are there, the press that are covering the show and the competitors. And Steve had never met Stokely or Ron. And he went up to Ron Goldstein and he said, nice to meet you, Stokely. Now, you know, Steve's a little Jewish guy. And, you know, Ron Goldstein's a Jewish guy. I mean, and you know, Stokely is not really the name. Stokely Palmer is not really a Jewish name. So you think Steve would have known that, like, that was not Ron Gulston? But you know,
that's pretty
just,
funny.
One of the funny scenes that we had. To see Ron's face when he called him Stokely was priceless.
Is that Stan why Yehuda Stokely?
Yehuda.
Is that why they won't be going this year?
I don't know if the guy, I don't know who's going or not, but you know, I just thought that was a funny story. You know, I was kind of embarrassed for Steve on that one, but it was worth a good laugh, that's for sure.
Well,
now the men's, it's very interesting the way they divide up that weekend, John, because it's there's so much going on Friday night starting at 5 o'clock. They do the women's pro fitness. The pro figure, the master's pro figure. They have a master's pro figure, believe it or not.
Great.
The women's bodybuilding and the men's 202 class. That's the Friday night.
That's Friday night.
Right. Wow. Then Saturday morning at 10 a.m., they do the pro men's prejudging, the open.
Right.
Okay. Then at 12 noon is the NPC show, which they run completely through. They don't stop. There's no prejudging night show. It's one long show.
Wow.
And then at 6 p.m., I think we usually get an hour or two break. 6 p.m. is the pro finals, which they do all the pro finals. Pro fitness figure, master's figure, women's bodybuilding, 202, and the men's finals. So it's going to be a really long weekend for us down at Atlantic City. And I'm sure it's going to be a great one. We got a great lineup. In the men's open, Melvin Anthony is going to be returning to try to defend his title from last year. Trying to stop him is going to be Gustavo Bedell, who hasn't done this show in a while, and Hidetada Yamagishi. So it should be a great top three. That's who I'm predicting top three. But we also have other competitors like Craig Richardson in the lineup, who's always a threat. Leo Ingram, Robert Petrakowicz, who was just placed recently at the Europa Super Show. You got Marcus Chacon from Spain, who's a freak. Frederic Sauvage from France, who was a 202 guy, but he's another freak. This guy gets absolutely shredded. He's got great shape. They got a great lineup in Atlantic City.
I really hope Robert Petrakowicz gets a better look this time, because he was so glossed over last time. That guy is amazing. And, you know, we've always said, Dave, you know, for ages, that bodybuilding shows are won and lost from the back. And this guy from the back looks insane. So, you know, I just think he just did not get a good look last time out. And I really hope the judges are listening tonight and make sure they take a look at this guy, because he's really, really impressive.
Well, he did get a good look because he placed third and he did qualify for the Olympia. So, you know, the guy, someone was taking notice of him. This guy is from Poland. He's won pretty much every amateur show all throughout Europe. I think they even had some kind of crazy amateur Grand Prix all throughout all the countries, even as far as Australia. And this guy won everything. So he's pretty decorated over in Europe. I think it's just a matter of people getting to know him here. He definitely was the tightest I'd seen him at the last show he was at. And I think if he brings that level of conditioning to this lineup, he could make an impact. I really believe it's Melvin Anthony's show to lose. I don't. If he's got the size, he's got the shape. If he brings the conditioning he brought last year, it's going to be a walk in the park for him. I haven't seen Gustavo Bedell look like the old Gustavo Bedell in quite a while now. Unless he brings those legs back up to what they were, you know, 2-3 years ago, I think he's going to have his work cut out for him.
Yeah, you know, the good thing about Melvin is that, you know, whether he's in shape or not, You can't help but love watching the guy pose. He's just such an amazing presenter and poser. So he's definitely got that going for him. Gustavo Bedell, you know, Flex Wheeler always used to say, you know, the bodybuilders usually have one good show in them, and you tend to rely on them bringing that back. You know, for Jay Cutler, it was 2001. For Ronnie, it was 98. For, you know, Sean Ray, it was 94 maybe, or 93. You know, and typically you never see a guy really repeat that kind of conditioning. I think Gustavo Bedell was 03. I think that was the best he ever looked. And we've been waiting patiently for him to come back and do it again. And he's just been very disappointing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been, you know, he's got a lot of stuff going on with his family, or if he's just, his body's gotten a little older. He may have some injuries we don't know about. He's a pretty quiet, you know, private guy. I don't know what's going on, but obviously this is a defining show for him. If he doesn't establish himself as being a dominant competitor here and doesn't qualify for that Olympia, I think that this may be all she wrote for him. Yeah. However, if he comes back here better than he's ever been and he maybe wins the show or even places a close second to Melvin, I think he's right back in that mix. So this is, like I said, a defining show. Hidetada Yamagishi, who's already qualified for the Olympia, if he comes into this show and he places third in this lineup, I think he's right in there. He's not going to be a top, probably won't be a top 10 Olympia guy, but to qualify for the Olympia, he had a bad year last year with all this crazy shit that happened with him getting arrested and the airport, and this really reestablishes him as a top, maybe second tier bodybuilder, and I'm not saying that in a negative way. It's just that the lineup at the Olympia this year is absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, it is. Now, just so our listeners and thick old me too can be refreshed in this, there's three Olympia berths available in this show. The top three go to the Olympia.
Correct.
Now, we already have Petrukowicz is already qualified.
Right.
I think Melvin Anthony's already qualified.
I don't know if he is.
He's not?
I don't think he is, no.
From winning, I guess that was last year.
No
he's not. Right. Okay, so assuming Petrukowicz is one or two or three, are they gonna qualify the fourth place guy?
They only go to the fourth place if all three guys are qualified. Now, I'm not sure if Melvin was sixth at the Olympia last year, right?
I think so.
I think they requalify the top six, right? So he might be qualified already. He may not need to do this. But I think he feels that he needs to do this. I think that, and I think it's a good idea for Melvin to do this, because I don't think Melvin is going to be a top six Olympian this year. Having said that, I think it would be nice for him to win this show and to go into the Olympia with a win under his belt, and and hopefully keep his momentum high and show at least his sponsor that he is a top level bodybuilder, even if he's not a top six Olympian this year. Now, that's not to say he can't break into that top six, because he's got the shape. It's just going to be a really tough lineup. And I have a feeling he's going to get edged out. Now, of the second group of people I mentioned, Leo Ingram is always a threat if he gets himself into shape. This Marco Chacon guy did very well last year. He's another threat. He's a big, big dude, lots of muscle. If he comes in hard with the striated glutes that I saw last year, this is a guy who's going to definitely be a top five guy to watch out for.
Right. So to clarify, it's the top three guys, if they're all already qualified,
they go to the fourth.
But if only one of them is qualified,
They don't.
Okay.
Now, in the men's 202 class, Flex Lewis waits till the very last contest possible to qualify for the Olympia.
Right.
This could be a little dangerous. God forbid the guy's a little off. I don't think he's going to have a problem requalifying here. He'll probably easily win this show. And move on to the Olympia 202. I don't know why he waited to the very last minute, probably because he wanted to spend as much time as possible packing on a little bit more mass. Not that he can really afford to hold too much mass at that 202 mark. He's got to be right on the button.
Yeah, I saw him, one show, I emceed recently.
Ronnie Coleman?
Yeah, Ronnie Coleman's show. I think he was one of the guest posers there, and he looked like a little freaking Sherman tank. I can't imagine him needing to pack on any mass. I'm wondering if he's going to make the cutoff.
Yeah, well, he'll make it, I'm sure. He'll have to suffer a little bit, but we'll have to see if he brought his upper body up in comparison to his legs. He's obviously got the real good wheels.
Yeah.
Now, Curtis Bryant, who made a very good showing at the, I believe it was the Europa Super Show, didn't qualify in that top three spot, but was right up there. This could be his chance to get that Olympia 202 qualification spot. I don't know if anyone in the lineup who's that much better than him. However, Jose Raymond, I thought, got a real raw deal at his last show. He brought a great package, shredded to the bone, tons of muscle. This guy is going to be a real force in this 202 class. I think he's very underrated. I'm predicting that he might snag a second place here behind Flex Lewis come Saturday.
Or he could win it.
You never know. Flex Lewis has got a lot of momentum going into this, but Jose Raymond packs a lot of muscle, if not as much as Flex Lewis. And remember, this guy turned pro as a middleweight.
Right, he did.
And don't forget, he started as, I think, a welterweight, didn't he?
He came up. Yeah. He's definitely come up along the way. He's definitely impressive. And, I really think this 202 class is getting teeth. It's more people are paying attention to it now that it's had a few shows under its belt, and the guys that are going into it are just really remarkable. And you got to remember, these are the guys that would have pretty much not be competing right now right. because they'd be knocked out by the sure. the 250-pound guys.
Right.
Yep. So I think they're paying attention to it. I think the guys aiming for that 202 cutoff are really paying attention, and you have really remarkable guys going in there like Flex Lewis and any of those other guys, actually, to comes down to it. I think it's a great thing for them to be able to do. And when you see a guy like Jose Raymond, who's come up along the way, who basically was at a point in his career where he said, "Ah, hell with this," you know, and now he's got a new direction, as most of these guys do. And we're getting, I think, for my money, in some of these shows, a better competition than the open class.
Well, you know, also in the running is Masters Nationals champion Lawrence Hunt. He will be, he got one of the pro cards at the Masters Nationals. Stan Efferding obviously got the first one, but he got the second one. He won the light heavyweight class. He'll be in the hunt there. No pun intended.
Yeah.
And Rob Belisle, who I helped over there in Canada, won the Canadian Masters Nationals as well as the Canadian middleweight class of the Nationals. He's got his pro card from that Nationals Masters win, and he'll be entering this competition. Well, he's another little freak. Gets really grainy hard. Has that kind of Dorian-esque conditioning level. So, you know, there's a lot of guys mixing it up in the 202. It's going to be an interesting battle, and we'll see who emerges on Saturday night. Now, in the women's division, the Atlantic City does have a women's bodybuilding division. I'm happy to say the Species Nutrition is sponsoring the women's coverage there. And Lisa Auchin is coming back. She's won this show 2 years in a row now.
Wow.
And she's kind of trying to make this show her show. You know, a lot of people criticizing her because she's, you know, she was third at the Olympia, and they're saying that she shouldn't be in the show. But you know what? Screw it, man. I tell, if these girls want to do more than one show, let them. You know, there's so few out there. You know, let her make a few bucks for herself. This is a show that she's kind of put her stamp on, her own personal stamp. The girl's 50 years old, you know, so, you know what? Let someone else knock her off. I say she's still the favorite. Nicole Ball is coming back from a fourth place disappointment in Tampa, and I know she's gunning for that Olympia qualification. I think she may give Lisa a run for her money. You got Wendy McCready from England, who looked real good last year. Watch out for her. And Claudia Larson, of course, is always right on the tail of Nicole Ball. And then you got Jen Sedia from Texas, who has got that beautiful small waist and broad shoulders. She could always sneak in there as well. So the women's event should be pretty competitive, John.
Yeah, I like Nicole Ball for as far as, you know, women bodybuilders go these days, and especially in a lineup like that. If she can come in, well, you're doing her diet, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, whatever you did last time, don't do it this time. and do something else, because when she's on, she is on, and she's got the perfect combination of a great structure, a great look. I like the way her muscles look. She's got a, you know, I think as far as a representation of women's bodybuilding, she's the kind of girl that people should be gunning for. Although, you know, Lisa Auckland is certainly a tried and true champion. This is her show to lose. But I don't know. I think it's time to go out with the old and in with the new.
Yeah, well, we had just put up a big profile in an interview with Nicole, and that's exactly the question I posed. Is this the new, or is this the future of women's bodybuilding? If it was, I think that it would become a hell of a lot more marketable. Nicole's a beautiful girl, a beautiful woman out there, and she's, the muscles just look good on her.
Yeah.
And you can't help but want to look at someone like that when they have that package going for them. Now, in Tampa, Nicole and I actually tried something a little different with her. She had put on about 5 pounds of muscle since last year, and we wanted to see if we could fill her up a little bit. And my usual protocol with women is to never feed them carbs, not right. even at the end. I don't like to carb them up, and it kind of, we tried it this time with her. We didn't do it last year, and it just didn't. It kind of backfired on us a little bit. It did smooth her out a bit. She still brought a better package than she did the year before, but you know, I guess the judges were used to seeing her real shredded.
Right.
So we're not going to make that mistake this time. So look for Nicole to be much improved. And like I said, there's other girls in this lineup too. It's pretty deep. That anyone can step up to the plate at any moment. moment. So I think Lisa's the one to beat. And Nicole obviously has a couple pro wins under her belt, including a win here in Atlantic City 2 years ago. So those two should be the favorites. Now, in the fitness, and we also have a fitness and figure pro division as well as a master's figure division. I'm not going to outline all those, but needless to say, John, it's going to be a very long night.
Oh, my God. I'm yawning already just thinking about it.
Nah, it should be exciting, though. This is the last chance these girls have to qualify for the Olympia, so there's going to be some real cat fights up there on stage.
Well, that part's exciting. It's just all the other crap that we have to do to bring it to our audience. And you know, the good thing about these shows, all of them, is the fact that you know they're in our backyard. So,
all right, let's move on, John. I got a couple of quick news items before we get to our guests. You know, I was reading an article where they were talking about the sexual mistakes that men make with women. And there was a whole bunch of them listed, you know. Being with them, right?
Marrying them.
No, but there was a couple of mistakes that you can make as far as, you know, getting them to like you, I guess, or continue to like you.
Oh, really?
And one of them really struck me as being interesting, and I wanted to mention it because I'm a big believer in this rule, too, and I never wrote it down, but I just knew it. Habitual hand-holding. Have you ever seen these guys that walk around holding hands with other girls? First of all, they kill all your action, because as soon as the girl you're with sees this going on, they're like, how come you don't hold my hand anymore? You know, which if you did that, they think you're a real sissy. Now, according to this article I read, they said that it's not a good idea to hold your girl's hand all the time, because they get it's annoying after a while to them, and then you become like almost like a leech on them. You know, they may want you to do it. They may say they want you to do it, but they really don't. Do you buy into that?
No.
So you think it's a load of horseshit?
Yeah. What's a load of horseshit?
Well, go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead.
No, John, you're the expert.
No.
You have a lot more years than I do.
But they were all tragic, so you go ahead.
I think that's the opposite. I think the guy's the one who gets bored of the hand-holding. I think the girl always wants that.
I totally
bullshit.
Agree.
No way. That's not the, according to the study. That's why I'm bringing it up. I'm actually happy that someone's actually confirming something that I have always believed. They don't like it. They like it in the beginning. It's cool in the beginning, but if you keep doing it, it's annoying.
Well, you know what's annoying, really, and I think the hand holding is you're scratching the surface. What I think is annoying is the clinginess, you know, where someone's like, they got to constantly be on you. You know,
right. Well, that's
you know,
hand holding
your shirt. You know, walking around and
my ex-wife used to hold the back of my shirt everywhere we went. It drove me nuts.
I would. You know, but there's a balance. I think there's a balance. I think there's a time and a place to you know, express yourself and your affection, and you know, some of that's in public, some of it's in private. But to habitually do it constantly is annoying as hell.
Of course it is. All right, then we're in agreement. Yeah. Then. No, because I mean, you've dated women, John, more than 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And how many times have you held the girl's hand after like 6 months were over?
Well, I do, but it's intermittent. It's not like I constantly do right. It. But you know, if you're dressed up, you're going out to dinner.
Different
you know,
story.
Yeah, I mean, you hold their hand, but I mean, to do it all the time is like that's ridiculous.
Now that's like overcompensation. Those are like the people who kiss each other before they go to the. I had this. I'm not going to say who it is. Actually, a professional bodybuilder now. Whenever I would go out to dinner with him and his girlfriend at the time, who they're no longer together, by the way, they would always if one had to go to the bathroom, they would be like, "Oh, I love you."
Oh, God.
And they kiss each other, and it was nauseating. And meanwhile, the girl I'm with is like, "Hang on, don't do that with me." I'm like, "Believe me, they're not going to last." They said.
But you know what? There's a beginning phase. You know, there's the newness phase. You know, where you're all over each other all the time, and then right. You know that naturally fades to a point where you know you're in a harmony with each other. But you know,
but what if it doesn't fade and the people keep doing it? I say it's a cover up for something that's
yeah, they're trying too hard. Something's right. Wrong. You got at some point you have to develop a security with each other that you don't need constant reassurance and validation of the relationship. You know it's there. It's strong. You feel it all the time, and you don't have to be constantly reaffirming it. All these little, you know, constant nagging right. Gestures all the time. But like you know, like I said, there is a balance. So as long as you find that balance and it's good between the both of you, I think that's good. But there's definitely couples that overdo it in one sense or another, and it's nauseating.
No, but what this article is saying is that women don't like it. It's a turnoff. It's a sexual turnoff.
I still think that's a little bullshit.
How many girlfriends have you had in your life?
Well, first of all, studies can show a lot of things and they can be disproven.
So, you know, I want to see exactly who they interviewed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I would coming like from a guy who's never been married or anything like that.
And for good reason. I have two examples of why I will never get married.
Right, well, then how do you
and John.
Yeah, my ex-wife, Max's mother, was one of those, you know, constant primping, you know, to when we'd go out to somewhere to dinner or whatever, you know, we'd be holding hands on the way in, and she this was the most annoying thing. She was the one who went out to hold my hand, all right?
Right.
She'd take two steps, not let go of my hand, she'd throw my hand down like it was a cold pork chop, all right, and fix a piece of her hair, you know, and then she'd grope for my hand again. If I take two more steps, throw my hand down and fix something on her shoe, you know, then grab my hand again, take two steps, they go, leave my fucking hand alone if you don't want to fucking hold it, you know?
This is the woman you've been in court with the last 5 years.
Oh, what a lunatic.
All right, yeah, so exactly. Don't use her as an example.
No, but.
Now, speaking of self-control issues, John, there's a woman by the name of Sean Cooper who struggles with this syndrome, and I don't know if you've heard about this. I know Colette knows this because she's a nutritionist. You ever hear of Prader-Willi syndrome?
No, I have not.
Prader-Willi syndrome is a chromosomal disorder where when you're born with this, you can't stop eating. You'll eat until it comes out of your freaking nose.
So you don't have any satiation.
No, yeah, it's you're constantly craving. Like if you give someone with Prader-Willi a jar of jelly, and you know they think they're going to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, they'll eat the whole jar.
It's like a dog. A dog will eat till he dies.
But unfortunately, it's a real syndrome that people live with. And imagine having a constant sense of hunger. Constantly, never goes away.
All you got to do is diet. I have that.
Yeah, but imagine having that all your whole life.
It would drive me nuts. Yeah. Is this guy weigh 980 pounds?
It's a girl, Sean Cooper. She's a girl. It's a girl's name.
How is she insanely obese?
She's a teenager. She's a fatty. Excuse me. That was a different person. I was looking at. Sean is 35 actually, and she's literally always hungry, around the clock. You know. Prader-Willi is my new coin phrase of the week. In med school, I had this friend of mine. He was obsessed with the word Prader-Willi. That's why I never forgot what it was. Sometimes I think Colette has Prader-Willi when she gets those peanut butter jars, but you know, it really is a pretty rare chromosomal disease.
You know a disease name I never understood. Maybe you can explain it to me. Munchausen by proxy. How do you get a disease by proxy?
I don't know.
Does someone vote for you when you're not there? How do you do that? How do you get a disease by proxy?
Well, how do you name a disease like that by, you know?
Well, I mean, I guess the first person that had it was Munchausen, but how do you get it by proxy?
I don't know. That's a good question. We got to
get together and do
a little research on that one because it's definitely a mental health disorder.
You kill your children or some shit. But I mean,
oh, that's right. Yeah. Right, I remember that. Right, it's like form of child abuse.
Yeah, mother. I think it's the mother. I don't know if it's an adjunct of postpartum depression, but the mother kills their kid.
Right.
But why is it by proxy? Has any other disease you've ever heard of been by proxy?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the I'm trying to find it here. I don't see what the by proxy means. Well, I'm sure we'll have one of our mental health care professionals who listen to the show email us or post on the board and tell us what the deal is with that.
Like the TSA guys chastising me for the 80-year-old woman with the cane.
Oh, did he?
I knew I was going to get a letter on that. You know, it's like, God forbid you insult a member of law enforcement because, you know, they're so wrapped up with the jihadists. You know, the whole concept is so ridiculous. Every single act of terrorism across the board, bar none, has been committed by a male Muslim extremist between the age of 17 and 45. No other act of international terrorism has been perpetrated by any other nationality or stereotype. Yet this 80-year-old woman has to go through the metal detector with without her cane. So I mean, they can't profile. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. It shows an inability to make a judgment call on the job, and the person that did it was a fucking moron. That's my position. And if you don't like it, fuck off.
You heard it from John Romano himself. He's in New York now, and he's
I'm adopting my old attitude.
That's right. He's back.
Right.
It's good to see. It's good to get you back. Well, John, we have to go to commercial break. We got lots of sponsors that need to be told and talked about and promoted. And when we come back, we have two great guests.
All right. See you in 2 minutes.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
If you're a serious athlete, you know you need energy to keep going. Good energy.
I got that JoJo swagger.
JoJo Energy Drink has it, with only 4 calories and no sugar, essential antioxidants, acai berry, and green tea extracts in pure spring water. And with flavor infusion technology, it's always 100% fresh. Oh yeah, with 6 incredible flavors, JoJo Energy Drink tastes awesome. Now you've got a new workout partner. Get good energy. Get JoJo Energy Drink. Available at JoJoEnergy.com.
German, American, technologies. Compete harder with GATT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet Fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle-exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. Jet Fuel, GATT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German, American, technologies website now. At TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German, American, technologies. Compete harder. TeamGAT.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hi, this is Lou Ferrigno of the Incredible Hulk. You are listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Colombo. And keep listening, the best show on the air.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
And our next guest was the super heavyweight and overall champ at this year's NPC Masters Nationals. For his efforts, he was given his IFBB Pro card. This guy's also one of the strongest men I've ever seen moving iron. Let's not waste a single moment more. I'd like to welcome Stan the Rhino Efforting to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the invite.
Yeah, I was, appreciative that you came on the show because, I never really got a chance to talk to you after you won the Nationals. And I had a lot of questions to ask you, especially since you seem to be a very polarizing person in the industry lately.
Yeah, I was exhausted after that. Jim Manning even came up and started talking to me. And he saw Let You Breathe and walked away. And, I felt bad I didn't have a chance to to communicate much with folks, but I'd given it my all. I was about all I could do to walk out of there.
Now, a lot of people don't even know really much about you, because sometimes the Masters Nationals don't get quite the exposure that, say, the regular Nationals do or the USA does. You obviously won your pro card this past July. You pretty much blew away everyone at that show and convincingly won the overall. Where have you been? Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, see a progression of from a bodybuilder, but you don't really compete that much in bodybuilding. Kind of, why were you out of the mainstream, and then all of a sudden you jumped on the scene again?
Well, I did jump back into the scene. You know, I started competing back in 1988 in some small shows. I was actually a novice under 165-pound class in my first show. I was a very little guy, about 140 pounds out of high school. And so I started real tiny, and I worked and worked and worked. It was probably 10 years of training before I actually entered a powerlifting meet. And by then, I'd already competed and won in the Mr. Oregon, took sixth in the Junior Nationals back in 92, competed in the Mr. USA back in 93, won the Emerald Cup once and took second once back in the mid-90s. So and then by then, I'd gained some strength, so I did a powerlifting meet in 1996 and put up some decent numbers. In 97, I just dropped out of the scene. I had to get to work and make some money and took 10 years off.
Wow. Hey, Stan, John Romano here.
Hey, John.
How are you, man?
Good, thanks.
Hey, yeah, Smelly Bell's been bugging me like crazy to get you on the show, and I'm glad it's finally happened.
Yeah, good for him. It's been a great resource for me. You know, when I got back into bodybuilding, it was 2006. I won the Emerald Cup, and I came back in 2008 and won the overall. And then when I decided to do the Masters, I spent 6 months training with Flex Wheeler, and it was such a great experience to train with the best, to try and be your best, that I thought I'd better try and apply that again for powerlifting. So I sought out what I felt was, you know, at least in this region of the country, was one of the best powerlifting coaches and gyms around. So I went and found Mark and said, hey, work with me. So he spent a couple months with me here getting me ready for what I presumed was going to be the world's strongest pro bodybuilding competition at the Olympia, hence my visit today, because apparently that's not going to happen for me. But he is going to get me ready for another powerlifting meet so I can set some other records and continue to establish myself as the world's strongest pro bodybuilder.
Well, it's not that wasn't talked about quite extensively, but you know, once we got involved with that whole idea with Johnny Jackson and Ben White, you know, Mark called me right away. You got to get Stan in here. He's gonna blow all these guys away. So, give us an idea. What are some of your lifts? What are your most impressive totals?
Well, I totaled 2,070 in a sanctioned meet, and that was this year at age 41. I did that in April, every March, April. Wow. And right after that, I spent 6 months training for the Masters Nationals. So I just 5 weeks ago, I started training again in powerlifting to get ready for another meet in case it came up. So that 2,070 total was a 550 bench, a 755 squat, and a 765 dead. And one of the things to understand about a powerlifting meet is you do three lifts, you know, back to back to back. So, you know, you start with the squat. You go to a bench-only meet, of course you're going to put up a bigger bench than if you've squatted first. So I've got some bigger numbers in the gym. I've shown those on video. But neither Johnny or Ben have ever put up a combination of numbers like I have. And mine are sanctioned, judged meets, and they can't touch my numbers.
What are your most impressive gym numbers? And we know they're not official, but you know, you can still give them to us.
Yeah, you know, I just paused a 585 in the gym on the bench 2 days ago, and it was easy for me.
Wow!
and so I'll easily put that up in the meet that I'm going to do here in 2 weeks. You know, I showed us some squats in the video. I doubled an 800 and I singled an 850 that were all meet legal to depth. The videos don't lie. And my biggest deadlift is also on video. It was an 825, and I showed where Johnny Jackson missed his 821 in a meet with a suit. So, I mean, it was just clear to me. And, you know, on the video, I wasn't trying to call out Ronnie, but I didn't have any comparative figures from Johnny or Ben
right
to match my squats up against.
Yeah.
So, you know, I threw Ronnie in there just to let people give him a perspective as to what's strong, because Ronnie's obviously, you know, one of the biggest, strongest freaks of nature on the planet. So, you know, let's put it into perspective as to what I can do, and just show that Johnny and Ben are out of the league.
Now, you're a big raw lifter, correct?
Yeah.
Were all these? I mean, I know I saw you. I think you had a super suit on for the deadlift. But do you normally lift in these? Are these meets raw? Or are they with shirts?
Meets are raw. I don't wear bench shirts or squat suits. So the numbers are, you know, pretty significant for raw. Well, as a matter of fact, it's the number one ranked raw total in America right now.
Wow.
I'm ranked number 12 in the world, but I have the highest 275-pound total. But they, you know, in the world rankings, they bring in different weight classes and they use Schwartz formulas. So your ranking fluctuates, not just on your total,
right,
but based on a number of other factors.
What about for guys over 40 years old? I bet you probably have the top lift, huh?
Oh, I presume so. But I've never used that as a crutch. Of course, I couldn't exactly say that at the Masters Nationals because that's how I won my pro card. Sure. So in powerlifting, I wanted to go against the best guys. And you know, in bodybuilding as well, you know, I've never shied away from that either. My training partner was Keith Williams, was going to do the USAs, and you know, I had full intentions, had I not done as well as I wanted to at the Masters, of entering the USAs, and I guess we'll have to see. I'm going to enter the Ironman Pro in January, so you know, we'll give everybody else a chance to make a judgment when I put myself up against some of the better guys in the world on a pro bodybuilding stage.
Did you put most of you, I mean, I haven't seen you, granted, in a couple of years, but I mean, it seems like you put an extraordinary amount of size on in the last 2 years or so, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think I was 250 in 2006 when I dieted down for the bodybuilding show.
Uh-huh.
And by 08, I'd come up to 270 and dieted down for a bodybuilding show. And you can see from my videos, I compete in the 275-pound weight class. And I'm lean at that weight.
Yeah, you are.
I'm hard. But I always manage to do cardio, calories, and just shed a lot of muscle getting ready for a show. Mm-hmm. Those were the biggest things Flex did for me, was feed me a lot more and not have me do any cardio. So I was able to hold on to the vast majority of my muscle. And so when I got to the Masters, I was 6'2", 260 on stage.
Wow. Yeah, you were ripped. I mean, you had the striated glutes and the whole to do. So it was impressive.
And that's the key.
Sure. Where'd you get the name the White Rhino?
You know, Flex pulled that out of his hat one day at the gym. He always makes fun of me for having these gargantuan hands and lifting all the heavy weights. And so he just he put that on me and it stuck. And he kept calling me that in all the interviews and videos. And next thing you know, I'd go someplace with Flex, and other people would be calling me Rhino. So I figured I'd just roll with it.
Flex has an obsession with big heads. I think his is small. That's all.
Yeah.
He likes to call me big-headed, too.
No, so. Not that that's any indication of intelligence, but...
I don't think he could remember my name, to be honest with you, for a long time. He figured he'd just call me whatever he wanted to call me, and that would stick.
You're right, probably.
You know, Stan, we had Louis Simmons on the show a couple weeks ago, and he's, you know, 61 years old or 62. And, you know, he's pulling and lifting some of the biggest weights ever in his entire life. And, you know, you made mention of the fact that you're 41 years old and strong as hell. Isn't it interesting that you guys, as older you get, the stronger you seem to get?
Yeah, it's kind of unfair of me to use being 40 as a crutch in terms of strength, because you're right. Presuming you can stay healthy, strength athletes generally depend on tendon and ligament strength more than muscle strength, and younger folks don't tend to have that. They don't have the amount of years put in. It takes much longer to develop those kinds of strengths in your tendons and ligaments. So guys in their 20s generally, you know, but for a few, it's a rare individual, Kevin Knee and a few of those guys, you know, they can pull up some big lifts, but generally get you guys in your mid to late 30s before they're the real champions are the best in their careers.
Right. All right, let's cut to the meat of the matter here. The issue is that you're pissed. You're pissed off that you weren't included in the strongest pro bodybuilder in the world challenge that's set to take place here between Johnny Jackson and Ben White at the Olympia. Talk to us about that. Were you ever included in it? Were you ever brought up? Where do you lie in this whole thing?
No, I was never included. When I heard it was happening, of course, I reached out and said, hey, why am I not in it? And I found out that it was going to be at the Olympia, so I contacted the Olympia folks, the Weider organization, AMI, and asked them if I could be in it. You know, apparently, I turned pro in July, and this thing had been in the works for some time. And there's other sponsors, and there's other people involved, and so, you know, I was told that next year. And so I just figured if these guys are going to compete for the title of World's Strongest Pro Bodybuilder, that that I should be in that competition because it's my title. I've already, Johnny says he's never claimed it, and it's for good reason because he's not. I have the records to prove it. They're sanctioned judged meets. My lifts beat his. I'm a pro bodybuilder. So it's my title. If they're going to compete for it, they should have to take it from me.
What's with all these? I mean, Johnny's claiming to have all these world records, and a lot of people are saying that they're not world records. I mean, have you looked into any of these things to see if they're real?
Well, the problem is that in powerlifting, you have so many different organizations and weight classes, and so somebody can be a world record holder, say in Pride Federation, but not an SPF Federation.
Gotcha.
Or not in the USPF. So when somebody claims a record, they're generally doing it within their own federation. My records are on powerliftingwatch.com. They combine all federations. So any raw lifter anywhere in the world that's competed in any federation, in any weight class, is going to be on that list, and I'm at the top of it. So that's why I'm saying I'm the world's strongest pro bodybuilder.
Gotcha. Now you have seen that Ben White has put up some pretty impressive totals on the bench. We don't really know what he's capable of as far as deadlifting. Would he intimidate you? Do you think that he's a dangerous guy to go against?
No. And you know, Ben's a good bencher. Back in 2003, he put up a 605. That's a huge lift. He hasn't done it since. I think his biggest lift in a meet since is 550.
Right.
You know, I do 550 for triples with a pause every workout, so that's going to be simple for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he can do at the Olympia, but my guess is he won't get over a 550, 570. So, you know, what he used to do, what he does now is two different things. And he can't squat and he can't deadlift. So, you know, I just don't know what claim he's got.
Right.
I think that he just pissed Johnny off. You know, Johnny's a hell of a strong guy. A lot of respect for Johnny. He's a great bodybuilder, one of the hardest working guys in the industry. He was competing in 6-7 shows a year for years.
Right.
And powerlifting, you know. A lot of respect for the guy. I'm not saying anything personal about Johnny. What I'm saying is they're competing for a title that's mine. I should be in it.
I think we should just reckon you as the title holder right now and let them compete for it and ostensibly take it from you if one of them wins, and then you'll have to just win it back next year.
Well, and you know, I'm going to be at the Olympia, and I've got an announcement to make. The Weider people have promised me I could do that. You know, we'll have to stay tuned for that. And I'll be making that kind of a challenge. And let me just say here, without saying too much, I'll be putting my money where my mouth is. And I'll tell you, Johnny said that, you know, and he says he's never claimed to be the world's strongest bodybuilder. He does say that he takes pride in his lifts and his reputation is on the line. He was quoted in Flex Magazine as saying that to Ben. I'm just trying to figure out what reputation is that. Is it the reputation as the world's strongest pro bodybuilder? Because I take pride in mine, and my reputation's on the line. If these guys are competing for a title that I already own, I've got something to say about that.
Well, you know, you definitely have a cogent point. But since Johnny and Ben have had this feud going on for several years, it just kind of makes sense. Let them settle it now in between the two of them, and then why don't you challenge the winner and maybe do it at the Arnold Classic?
You know, I don't know when it'll be done. I don't know when it'll be done, but I absolutely am always here to challenge not just Johnny and Ben. And if they want to have a grudge match, have a grudge match. But careful what you call it. You know,
right.
don't put my title on it and then claim that. You know, Muscle Tech might want to say it, but that doesn't make it true. You know, if they want the world's strongest pro bodybuilder, they can call me and hire me. But they certainly shouldn't put on a show like this and make some claim that isn't true because, you know, those are my numbers. And it's my title. So, yeah, have the grudge match. I'll be making an announcement at the Olympia, and you're darn right, I'm always available to for them to challenge me for my title,
right.
And I'll be letting them know that.
So you're pissed off basically because you have the numbers to prove it, and then they don't, and they're basically trying to declare themselves as a title that you feel that you deserve, whether you own already.
Yeah, you know, Johnny's pissed because Ben's talk smack. I'm not pissed, I'm proud. I've worked hard to make these achievements, and I want to make sure that somebody else doesn't get credit for the stuff I've done.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, Stan, you made a very profound statement and very honest statement by that means to me the other day when we were emailing back and forth. When I asked you about if your appearance on this radio show today would violate any exclusivity contract you had. And you said to me, and I quote, "No one owns the Rhino." Now, do you think it's pretty ridiculous that bodybuilding is the only sport in the world where all news agencies don't have access to interviewing all the athletes?
Yeah, you know, I think that is kind of ridiculous. But I've seen some overlap. You know, the Weider organization wasn't opposed to photographers from Muscular Development taking pictures backstage of their athletes. So I don't know how...
That's not true, really, because you know what? Tony Freeman...
unspoken, but there is a little bit of elbowing going on, of course, amongst all these competing ventures.
Well, I mean, Tony Freeman was docked 2 months' salary because he let people take pictures of him other than Weider at the Arnold last year. So,
yeah.
I mean, there
is... I got a lot to learn there, I'll be honest with you, because I'm new to the scene, and I've always been my own man, haven't been owned by anybody. So, I'm not subjected to that, but I'm seeing day by day what goes on in the industry. But it's a competitive industry, so I presume I'm going to learn a lot more.
Well, you know, to be fair, you know, the Weider organization, especially if you go through Robin Chang, has been very amenable, at least to us, to giving us access to athletes and whatnot. So, you know, they are pretty bendable. It's just that there's a, you know, another entity out there that seems very possessive when it comes to, quote, their bodybuilders.
Yeah, it seems like people get very competitive, and as am I. but I don't own anything or anybody, so I guess I can't make claims on anybody else. I'm just trying to do what I can do for me and do the best I can. And, you know, I'm having a lot of fun with this for the first time in a long time. I sat behind the desk for 10 years running my own businesses, and, you know, I finally feel like the sun's shining again, and I'm enjoying myself. I'm traveling around. I'm working very hard, and... you know, I could plan on continuing to do this for some time. So I'm enjoying this, and I certainly don't want anybody to interpret it otherwise when I'm out here calling folks out. I'm hoping that it's exciting for the sport, and
of course
I hope it raises the level of competition for all of us. I hope Johnny gets better, I get better, Ben gets better. You know, Johnny and Ben had a dispute over the world's strongest pro bodybuilder, and Johnny said a few things about Ben being a booth boy, and Ben turns around and gets the best shape of his life and beats Johnny at the Tampa. Well, that's exciting to me. You know, so now Johnny got to come back and do better at the next show. I'm running my mouth about these guys at this pro powerlifting competition, and I'm going to be standing on the Ironman stage in January. I think that's the perfect opportunity for these two to come back and say something to me.
I agree. Now, you mentioned something briefly. You did have a pretty successful run in business for a number of years. I'm assuming that's why you were kind of removed from the scene. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, about 8 years ago, I started a telephone company up in Washington, Tacoma, Washington. And I was reselling phone service, and I expanded to 25 states and was selling phone service to upwards of 100,000 customers in those states, and ran a call center at 100 employees and worked that up to about a $25 million gross revenue business a year. That got hit pretty hard by the change in the economy and the FCC changing the rules for competitive behavior amongst telecommunications companies. But during that time, I was also fortunate to be able to get into a lot of real estate ventures. I purchased apartment communities and ran them and resold them. I bought some and parsed them off as condos and resold them. Built some single-family homes and subdivisions and sold those. And, of course, we all know what happened to the real estate industry recently. let's just say I've had some time on my hands this last year or two, and I've used it to pursue, you know, an old passion of mine, and rather than struggle around in this economy and, you know, try and do what I can while I still have my feet underneath me.
Gotcha, yeah. So, other than setting some incredible gym totals and powerlifting records, what's next for you? Are you going to focus more on bodybuilding, or are you going to do more powerlifting, or where's your passion headed?
you know, it's always been bodybuilding. Like I said, I trained in bodybuilding for 10 years before I ever did a powerlifting show. I've only ever done 2 powerlifting meets and 2 bench dead meets in my life.
Oh, wow.
I haven't competed a lot. I did 2 back in 1996, and I did 2 this year, 1 in December, 1 in April.
Right.
And that's all I've done for powerlifting. So I've just always trained heavy, a lot like Ronnie always said, or a lot of those big-time Dorian Yates, you know, always trained that way. And right. Kind of a Mike Mentzer theory. I've always just tried to train heavy, and so it resulted in good strength on these lifts. But I'm pursuing bodybuilding. I definitely want to do better there. I want to make an impact at a pro level, and of course it's everybody's desire who's a pro bodybuilder to get on the Olympia stage someday.
And the way you're going, I don't doubt to see you there next year. You know, whether you be doing the strongman, I mean, or the liftoff, or you'd be doing the actually competing. Now, would you ever do both, or would you pick one or the other?
You know, I always do both. I always train in heavy, basic, multi-joint movement, squat, deadlift, bench. So it seems like all year long I'm doing that, but then I diet for shows, and it'll be bodybuilding for sure for me.
So you'd pick bodybuilding if you qualified for the Olympia in both?
Oh, if I was qualified for the Olympia and the pro...
And the strongman. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely be the Mr. Olympia. I can do the strongman stuff. And, you know, like I said, there's tons of federations there in every city in the country. You know, if Johnny Jackson wants to beat my totals, he can go to any competition on any given weekend in just about any city or state in the country and beat my totals and really make the claim.
Right.
But it's not as though you have to meet on one given night.
It's more exciting
like
that way. It's more exciting though.
Yeah, to have them head to head, it's exciting. But the numbers are the numbers, you know.
What about strongman, Stanley? Would you ever get interested in some of the strongman competitions?
You know, I've never tried it. I wouldn't even know if I was good at it. It's a completely different kind of training. Those guys have to have power involved. They have to carry heavy loads for a duration. So they've got, you know, to break through that lactic acid barrier. It's a totally different type of training to run lifts for 90 seconds or a minute, you know, 2 minutes straight with repetitions. So I never tried it. Some of the awkward things that they lift, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I tried lifting an Atlas stone one time, and the little tiny pebble that I picked up by comparison to some of the record ones was just really, really taxing and very, very difficult to do. So who knows? You might get too good at bodybuilding and too good at powerlifting. You may have to switch over.
I don't know. I would never make any presumptions about that because, I'd hate to make anybody think I was making a comparison to a strongman. It just doesn't, it's not the same. It doesn't translate. It's a totally different type of training.
Yeah. Do you ever get worried that you're going to get injured, you know, from lifting all these heavyweights? I mean, does it ever go through your mind when you're actually doing the lift?
You know, it never goes through my mind when I'm doing the lift. Sometimes you have those nightmares, the same ones bodybuilders have, about walking out on stage pale, white, and hairy, and smooth. And
yeah,
a bunch of
I have that a lot.
We've all had those.
I still have them. I don't even compete anymore.
I look in the mirror today and have that.
I won't watch any of those videos that show people getting hurt doing it. And you see, from my video, you know, I've got 5 spotters around me at all times. That's the way we do things. We want to make sure that we minimize injuries. I a lot of people give me feedback that Ronnie did his 800-pound squat with 1 spotter, and I had 5. And so I don't think it matters if you have 30 spotters. You know, if nobody's touching the bar, you're still lifting the weight. But I'm training to be safe, and I think that powerlifting, more people get injured playing softball on the weekend, because in powerlifting, you know, and bodybuilding, you're under control, doing controlled movements as opposed to these kind of awkward type impact injuries that you get from sports.
Yeah. Well, unless you're Kamali, John, right? Kamali had, what, like 40 spotters lifting?
He had so many spotters in a Smith machine that you couldn't even see where he was.
I'm only worried if they're touching the weight. Don't touch the weight.
All of his were touching.
All of his were touching, and he was doing those little micro squats, you know? He was little one-inch travel.
Oh, no.
Now, where are you living?
We're getting started. Yeah. I don't want to call out anybody else now.
Where are you living these days, Stan?
You know, I haven't been home much in the last 5 months. I have a nice place up in Tacoma, Washington. That's home for me. I've lived up in the Seattle-Tacoma area for 10 years. But I've lived in San Jose for almost 3 months training with Flex. Now I'm in Sacramento for the last couple of months here training with Mark Bell at Super Training Gym. And then I get to go home for a little while, and then probably have to come back to San Jose and start training for the Ironman with Flex. I've just felt that when you commit yourself completely to something and get with the best folks, that you have the best results.
Yeah, no, well, it worked for you, definitely. And we want to wish you congratulations on your Masters victory and on your continued success. And you'll keep us updated as to your latest world record lifts there. And are you going to be at the Olympia watching that liftoff?
I'll be there. I'm going to do a powerlifting meet the week before. I'll post those results online on video for everybody to see.
Cool.
And then I'm going to be at the Olympia bouncing around at a few different places. Ed Cohn's coming, you know, legendary powerlifter Ed Cohn's going to come. Mark Bell's going to come, so I'll have my power team here with me. And then, of course, Flex Wheeler has a booth there, the EFX booth, and I'll spend some time with him. But the Wheeler folks promised me I could have a little mic time on stage. So I plan on being involved as much as possible.
I can only imagine what you're going to say.
So yeah, you better believe I'll be there.
He's like Clubber Lang in the Rocky III movie. You know,
you demand some guts. So make sure you run into us when we'll do a little interview with you while we're there.
Yeah, we'll get
for
you
sure,
take on the
line.
Yeah, all right, Sam.
Really appreciate
thanks.
You having me on. Set the record straight.
Yeah, I appreciate you stopping by and keep us updated.
All right, thanks, John. Thanks, Dave.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RXMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today.
When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
If you're a serious athlete, you know you need energy to keep going. Good energy.
I got that JoJo swagger.
JoJo Energy Drink has it, with only 4 calories and no sugar, essential antioxidants, acai berry, and green tea extracts in pure spring water. And with flavor infusion technology, it's always 100% fresh. Oh yeah, with 6 incredible flavors, JoJo Energy Drink tastes awesome. Now you've got a new workout partner. Get good energy. Get JoJo Energy Drink. Available at JoJoEnergy.com.
German American Technologies. Compete harder with GATT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet Fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. Jet Fuel. GATT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now.
at TeamGat.com. That's TeamGat.com. German, American, technologies, compete harter. TeamGat.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hey, this is the Game Triple H from the WWE. You're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by Progenix. Visit ProgenixSRG.com.
All right, John, our next guest has worked with elite-level bodybuilders in the Middle East, preparing them for shows, helping them to reach the pro ranks of the IFBB. He's also extremely versed on drug usage and drug testing procedures. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our next guest, Ali Amini. Welcome.
Hi, Dave.
Did I pronounce your name correctly?
It's Ali Amini.
Ali Amini. Okay. Sorry, I like to get the names right.
I thought it was George Farah.
Ali, you know, a lot of I've heard you before on other radio shows, and that's why I agreed to have you on here. You're very well spoken. You're very knowledgeable. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you're best known for in the bodybuilding world, you know.
Well, I prepare athletes, all type of them, but like track and field and bodybuilders and regular guys who just want to get into modeling and things like that. But, you know, I got mainly famous for passing the doping test and
what
to use.
You're like a guru over there in Europe where they're dealing with the world championships and all that stuff, correct?
Yeah, a lot of people call me the Chad of the Middle East.
Chad of the Middle East.
Yeah.
That's funny. What famous Middle Eastern bodybuilders did you have on hand and helping? Did you have a hand in helping to achieve the physique that they have today?
Well, to name like the top guys, I started working with Tarek before he became famous. Tarek El Satouhi.
Tarek El Satouhi, right?
Yeah, and that was before he becomes pro. I helped him for the Body Extreme and the European Championship in 2005.
Right.
And at the same time, I was helping as well Samuel Haddad to do the WrestleMania show in 2005.
Hmm.
Then I worked with him in 2006 for the Night of Champion, then 2007 for the couple of PDI shows, one in Norway and one in France. And I also helped, on a consulting side with the world overall champion Ali Tabrizi,
right,
who won the championship, the overall championship twice. Yeah, and I worked with IFBB pro Wong Hong as well.
Wong Hong, yeah.
It's
a great name.
And a lot of amateurs, locally in the GCC and, the Arab countries, the Middle East, and these places. So,
now, wasn't the Muscle Mania show a natural show?
Yeah, well, that's what they said. So. but we could have passed the test. I mean, Sammy got tested and he passed the test. So, yeah, we complied to the rule.
The drug test show. We're going to get to that in a little while about drug testing, but just let's start us off by letting us. We got to get a little bit of taste of what's going on in the Middle East, and we don't really know. I'm not privy to that. So, what kind of steroids are actually currently available over there in the Middle East? Like, what are people using?
I think the third thing is it's the same everywhere. Just the brands are different. Like we get, all types of testosterone, the mixes. We got, certain kinds we can get them from the pharmacy, from certain countries. And then, we got all the oils, all the injectables. Like what bodybuilders are interested in is like growth hormone. We can get those from pharmacies as well. Anadrols, Anavars, Winestrol, we can get them from, some companies, I don't know if you got them this year or not, but the best company that we got at the moment is Global Anabolics after Bridge Dragon just closed. So.
Right. Now, are these available through a pharmacy, or which ones are
you can get? No, like testosterone enantate, you can get it through a pharmacy. Testosterone, you can get it through a pharmacy.
Gotcha.
Growth hormone, we can get it. Humalog, we can get it without prescription. A lot of diuretics, we can get it through the pharmacy, but then when you go to like oxymethylone, oxandrolone, and standard, all that should be bought through a third party, let's say.
Right. Now, are steroids illegal in the Middle East?
It's not illegal, but it's not legal. There isn't any rule for it. So if you get caught, they will confiscate the stuff, take it to the Ministry of Health. They will say, no, it's a steroid, you cannot take it, and that's it. But you don't get,
you don't get arrested.
Sued for it or anything. Yeah, you don't get arrested. And even a guy got busted, a year back, and he was a big joint steroid dealer in the beginning. Then he started bringing on Ketagon. So when they checked his apartment, they left all the steroids, and they just took the Ketagon pills, and he was he was put in jail just because of Ketagon. But the steroids, they just remained in his apartment.
What did they put him in jail for?
Ketagon.
Ketagon. What is
What's that?
That?
Yeah. That's something that gives you speed.
Oh, it's like an amphetamine.
Yeah, people used to use it in the 80s, I guess. Yeah, and now mainly the people who use it are, believe it or not, the big 18-wheel drivers?
Right. They're like stimulants.
You cannot close your eyes for 36 hours.
Wow, that's strong, yeah.
Even if you're tired, you cannot shut your eyes. So it's that strong.
It's like
Viagra. Even when you don't want to do anything, you get the heart on. So.
We should give Sean, the Big Sean Andrews, some of those. Yeah, he needs them. He likes to stay up for days at a time.
What are prices like there? What's a bottle of testosterone go for?
We get the enanthate, 1 milli of enanthate for $8, and the Sustanon is $6 to $7.
That's not that cheap. Wasn't it used to be a lot cheaper?
Yeah, if you get this stuff from these are stuff from the pharmacy. They're certified from the Ministry of Health, and they're the real thing. We get it from Shearing.
Right.
But, you can get, the ones from Pakistan. They're, sometimes a couple of bucks only.
Yeah, because I remember when I went to Spain years ago, about 10, 15 years ago, the testosterone was, $3 or something like that in the pharmacy.
Yeah, you can get the one from, the testosterone from Iran is called Abrehan?
Yeah.
That one actually costs a quarter to buy it. People sell it for a dollar.
Wow. Omnigen? You said Omnigen?
No, it's testosterone enanthate.
Oh, and what's the name of the brand?
Abu Rehan.
Okay, and where's that from?
It's from Iran.
From Iran. Okay. And it's good, too. I've used it, years ago.
Yeah, it's good, yeah.
Wow, a quarter. Wow. That's pretty good, John, huh?
Yeah, the box has 250 per milli, but, it has around 170, 180.
So you got to take two.
You take two for a quarter, 50 cents. Now, can you imagine, John, if you can get like 100,000 of those vials over here, what they're worth?
Dave.
That was another life, though, John.
We don't do those things anymore.
Of course not.
No matter how much multiples we put in our head.
The terrorists should be shipping steroids over here. They should be shipping money over here.
Yeah,
it's worth a lot more.
So anyway,
all right.
You know who Don Catlin is? I'm sure, right, Ali?
Yeah, I heard of him. Yeah.
Okay, we had him. He's for those of you who don't know, he's the former head of the Olympic drug testing lab. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and from what I understand, if you listen to that broadcast, how does the testing in Europe and in the Middle East differ from what we are doing here in the U.S.?
Okay, first of all, let me give you guys props for that show. That was one of the best shows, plus having Triple H on the show. And the whole procedure of, taking samples and doing the test, it should be standard. And last time, in the last show, you guys explained the way that tests are done in the lab. So, if you want, I can explain to you how the sample should be taken. And these are standard things that I'm saying. It should, they call them doping certified officers, water doping certified officers, or the DCOs. Those are the guys who actually collect the urine from the athletes. And the whole process that they do is standard. So, do you want me to explain that?
Sure.
Okay, so first of all, they give you a couple of, it has to be at least three. They're called collection vessels. It's like a cup that you give the sample in. Then you got to go to a place that you stand with the officer, and you should face him, and the officer should be from the same gender. Then you got to bear from the waist to the thighs, and urine in the cup. and the officer should observe all of that. Okay, just to make sure that it's actually your urine that's going in the cup.
Right.
Now, previously they used to ask for 75 to 100 ml, but now they standardized on 90 ml.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take that and they split it into two containers, sample A and sample B. And the rest, which remains, the sample A takes like 50 milliliters and the sample B takes 25. And the rest, which remains in the cup, they check for specific gravity and for the pH level.
Right, to make sure it's real.
The pH level is very important because some people mix soap in it, in the urine, which actually spoils the sample.
Really?
When they take it to the lab, they cannot test anything.
Wow, I didn't even know that. How do they get...
What happens is these officers sometimes bypass that. And these days, I think all of them bypass it. So if you take a sample and they do a pH test, and the pH test should be between 5 and 7.
Right.
If it's more than that, you should immediately fail the test.
Wow.
Which indicates that you manipulated with the... This is what I'm saying is from the rule book, but it's not always applied. And, I mean, these days it's never applied.
How would you get soap in a urine sample if they're watching it leave the body and go into the cup?
Because what I just told you is what is supposed to happen.
Ah, okay.
But it doesn't happen like that. You know. In 2005, at the World Championship, an entire team said that they cannot go to the bathroom, and they're not going to give a sample. So the officer stayed there for like 3-4 hours with them, and they just let them go after that.
What? They really?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
Now they were late for dinner.
Now, if you put soap into the sample, you know, I guess you're talking about a couple drops of like a liquid soap. So you can't test the sample. None of the metabolites will come up.
Yeah, you sabotage it basically.
Wow, that's interesting to know that.
You know, people used to drink soap.
Did they really?
Yeah, and that worked.
And drinking soap, holy mackerel!
How'd they keep from vomiting?
I don't know.
Well, they would do anything to win.
Yeah, I guess.
Now, obviously, you mentioned the World Amateur Championships being a drug-tested competition. I was there. My girlfriend was in it. She actually won the women's bodybuilding overall. And they do take drug samples after that. I remember they did that. Do you think that all the winners are drug-free?
No. I can assure that none of them are drug-free.
Now, how hard is it to pass the drug test in your mind?
It's not as easy as a lot of people say it, but, if you know your way, if the stuff that you get are legit, you can pass the test.
Victor Conte...
You cannot be in the condition like, you know, when you are for a non-tested show. Because there are a lot of things that you cannot take and a lot of things that you should cut very early to be able to be clean on the day of the show. So, yeah, but again, you can come in a very decent physique. Like, you can still maintain anywhere between 70 to 80% of your maximum potential.
No. Now, Victor Conte always says that passing a drug test at an actual competition is equivalent to passing an IQ test. It's just a matter of knowing what to do. Is that correct?
Depends from which perspective he's talking. I mean, first of all, you got to know the date. Then you got to do it, like you got to count everything. Let's take a sample for like bodybuilding show. First of all, let's talk about the anabolics that they take. They usually go for testosterone propionate, winestrol tablets, and oxandrolone tablets. Okay? The three drugs that I mentioned, they stay in the system for around 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So they should cut that 3 weeks before, let's say, the weigh-in, because sometimes they take the test even at the weigh-in. Then you got the fat-burning agents, which they can take T3 until the day of the show, because, you know, they cannot test for that through urine. And they can take ephedrine for, like, they should stop at, like, 2 weeks, and clenbuterol for, like, 5 days is enough. And it will clear from the system.
5 days, so that's good.
Yeah.
Good to know.
So you're basically giving us an example of a protocol you would design to help an athlete test clean. This is like the whole deal.
Exactly. And if you stop all this stuff like 3 weeks out, you can still maintain a lot. And you know, some people still go, you know, the extra mile by adding like testosterone decanate, which clears from the system in like 5 to 6 days. So if you stop it a week out, you're fine.
So you could take Andriol, which is the pills.
Yeah, Andriol, testosterone decanate, you have soft gels.
Up to 5 days, you're saying?
Yeah, it's 5 to 6 days. Yeah. See, the thing is, the numbers are not always exact. It depends on, you know, the First of all, the genetic part. Then it depends how fast your body metabolizes the substances, and the body fat actually, the body fat percentage affects that as well.
What about something like suspension?
Suspension works for an hour only. So, you know, after a day, you're clean. But using suspension in bodybuilding, I mean, I don't recommend that. But, yeah, some people do it as well. But you're clean in, like, in a day or so.
Wow, that's quick. Now, what about growth hormone you could obviously keep in, correct?
Yeah, growth hormone. I mean, the whole body issue with the growth hormone, that's another story. I mean, in 2004, they all said that. And by end of 2003, they announced that they have sort of a mechanism, a new way to test for growth hormone. And they said that, you know, there's a company that's going to make antibodies for them, but that's all through blood. To take blood tests, and, you know, through the antibodies, they can detect GH. Then suddenly they said there's another company who took over that company, and they're going to make it, but it will take some time. And then in 2006, they said that the company that took over was not willing to work with WADA. So... Those are the gray areas that nobody knows about.
Yeah, Don, we know a lot about gray areas. Yeah, now, Don Catlin says he's working on a growth hormone test, so we'll see.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if he comes up with one.
But I don't think it's, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it's possible because, you know, growth hormone, everybody knows it's a 191 amino acid chain. But then again, what are amino acids? They're the proteins that we digest. So the metabolites of growth hormone is going to be anyway... exactly the same as metabolites of, you know, whey protein or steak or chicken breast or...
True.
It's like certain what do you call, plasma expenditures. They're long-chain carbohydrates. So when they take them, you know, a lot of people use them as an automatic diuretic for, you know, especially for bodybuilding shows and all. What happens is the metabolites of that ends up being like certain kinds of sweetness.
Certain kinds of carbohydrates, like...
Exactly. Yeah. So, like some of the sweeteners are very similar to that, and they cannot tell the difference if it's through a urine test.
Right.
So, I mean, when they announce that somebody failed the test for that substance, he's definitely going to go to court, and they'll say, "I was having like, let's say, a packet of Equal or a packet of Blender or whatever," and they'll say, "Yeah, it's exactly the same." So.
Gotcha. Now, what about diuretics? What do people usually use to beat the drug test? Because I know they test for the usual diazide, Lasix type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, some people use potassium sparing diuretics and stop it like 3 days ahead, which again it clears from the test. Like taking Aldactone and stopping it 3 days before the test, that clears up.
Yeah, but that's not going to really work well.
Yeah, but you know, some people just for the next 3 days they're willing to not drink water and stop sodium and do a lot of crazy stuff, and yeah, they hold the condition.
Okay. Now, from what you tell...
Yeah, and then there are still there are a lot of diuretics that are not on the list. And by taking that, you know, the diuretics usually, you know, there was a guy who got caught in the Olympics in fencing. I forgot his name. Now, his problem was he was caught on diuretic, and everybody was saying, like, he's a fencer. What does he need to take a diuretic for? Diuretic acts as a masking agent. So by, you know, by taking a lot of... water with the metabolite, it doesn't show enough. So when they do the test, a lot of the substances just clear out.
Gotcha. You're flushing, you're kind of watering them down.
Exactly, yeah.
And we don't want to mention the diuretics, but there are diuretics that are not on that list that people, if they are smart enough, they could find out what they are.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, from what you tell me, bodybuilding competitions work a little differently in your part of the world over there. In the United States, prejudging pretty much determines the winner of the contest, but that's not the case in other parts of the world. Explain how that works.
Okay. First of all, prejudging, the name is still there, only because, you know, for itinerary reasons, because people are used to having the part of the show, which is before the actual show, called as prejudging. And the scorecard is called round one.
Okay.
Round one, what they do is, depending on, you know, which type of show is, they just take out the top five or the top six of the whole whatever number of athletes you have. So these guys actually get qualified for the next part, which is going to be either in the afternoon or the next day. Then you got round two. Round two is judged on the posing round.
Wow.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the posing round. And you got round three. Round three is judged on the seven compulsory poses. It's still seven. It's not eight in the amateurs. Okay? The most muscular is not included.
Okay.
Then the round one doesn't hold any weight, because the round one you just you know, took out the top five or the top six. So the guy who actually played sixth and qualified for the finals, he can place first easily.
Okay, so they throw out all the prejudging scores essentially.
Yeah, the round one. Let's go
right.
to round one.
Round one. Round one doesn't count. Yeah.
And then round two is, you know, they take out the highs and lows and just keep the middle five judges' scores.
Right. Right.
And that's the score for round two. Round three, they do again the same thing. They cut out the highs and lows and keep the five that remain, but that number is multiplied by two. So round two holds one third of the total score.
Gotcha.
And round three holds two thirds of the total score.
That makes sense.
So that's the way it's judged. And if there is a tie between two athletes, they usually refer back to round three, which is the last one, which is multiplied by two, which is for the seven compulsory poses. And that round actually determines if there's a tie. Determines the winner.
That's pretty cool. So basically what you're saying is that you have to be in just as good a shape, if not better shape, for the second day of competition as you do for the first day of competition.
Oh, yeah. If you're smart, you just go in the first day just to be at a good level, just to be in the top six. If you're one of the elite bodybuilders,
right.
And keep your ultimate condition for the last day, because that's what actually counts.
Interesting. That's what Gustavo maybe got confused, John.
Yeah.
Remember at the Olympia that year?
Right.
He was peaking for the second day?
Yeah. He thought he was in the Middle East.
Yeah.
But this thing happened only after 2006. Before it was like the old way. And now even they're thinking of changing the judges of round one and round two and three.
Oh, that's good.
So the judges won't be influenced by the first impression.
Gotcha.
That's a pretty.
They still didn't apply this rule, but they're thinking of like having change the judges at the finals.
Now, is this at the top IFBB level there in Europe?
Yeah, this is done in the IFBB Amateurs and IFBB Asian Show and the Arabic Championship, the Mediterranean. Yeah, all the shows which are in this area.
Gotcha.
Now, do they have fitness figure and body and women's bodybuilding and bikini over there also?
No, they just started fitness, and they're starting to attach the name fitness to IFBB always. So even the Asian Federation is called now the Asian Federation for Bodybuilding and Fitness. Oh. Before it used to be Asian Bodybuilding Federation only.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ali, let's talk a little bit about drug usage. Many of our listeners and forum posters are constantly asking the question about growth hormone and insulin usage. And I would go so far as to say growth hormone, insulin, and thyroid hormone. What's the best way to use those hormones together?
I wrote an article about growth hormone and how to use it. And insulin, again, each one of them is a different story. Like growth hormone, first of all, my protocol is always look how the body works and try to duplicate that. Like, a lot of people like using growth hormone as soon as they wake up.
Me.
Right?
Yeah, I recommend that.
Exactly, yeah. But, that's the time that your body actually starts producing growth hormone.
Right.
So the idea is you don't want growth hormone to be constant in your body. You just need it at a certain time to get released, hit the liver. I mean, after you inject growth hormone, any time between six minutes to 20 minutes, depending on the type of injection, if it's, if it's an IV or if it's an IM or the sub-Q, it just disappears from the system. It hits the liver, and the liver does all the work by releasing all types of growth factors. It's not just IGF and IGF-1 and IGF-2. There are a lot of growth factors, and I think there are a lot of them that they still didn't discover them. Because, with growth hormone, you get a lot of benefits, to the joints, to the bones, and the way of thinking, the quality of, the hair, the nails, everything. I mean, with growth hormone, everything becomes better. So there are a lot of growth factors that are released by the liver.
Right.
And that's the benefit that I'm trying to get from the growth. So basically, using growth is at the time you use growth, the same time that the body actually produces, and that is usually at night.
But why would you want to take it when your body's already producing it at that time?
To have more.
But wouldn't you? How do you know your body would produce less because you're taking some?
But that less is not enough. The thing is that we know that the pituitary gland efficiency doesn't reduce. But the growth hormone production reduces after a certain age. So it means that by having more growth hormone, you're still going to get the same reaction from the liver.
But why wouldn't you want to take it when your body's not producing, when it's the most catabolic, which is in the morning?
Because, you know, there are certain times that, you know, growth hormone is, you know, these, the amino acid peptides, you know, they're the type of hormones that you don't want to have them 24/7. It's like insulin. Why? I mean, if you're not a patient, why would you want to have insulin 24/7? It does make sense if you take insulin and eat all the time, right?
Right.
But there are certain times that, you know, by having low blood sugar, the body does a lot of other things that the body actually benefits. So the growth hormone thing, I mean, I take it from this perspective, that I'm trying to duplicate the body, and I want certain times to not have growth hormone in my system.
And what would be the benefit of not having it there?
I mean, it gives the chance for the body to produce. I mean, see, a lot of people are against somatostatin because it's anti-growth hormone, right?
Right.
But, I mean, if the body produces it, it definitely has some kind of benefit.
Yeah, it stops growth hormone from being released.
Yeah, but there are definitely other benefits that they still didn't discover. It's like cortisol. Cortisol, still nobody knows. I mean, if you look at it from a sports standpoint, cortisol is bad, and that's it, right?
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, as long as the body produces it, there should be a certain time in the day that you need cortisol in your body. For what? Maybe, you know, the science still didn't discover this. Mm. But I mean, what I recommend is, as long as it's in your body, it is good. So you have to give some time for that thing to be produced in the body. I mean, I hope what I'm saying is making sense to you, right?
No, good, yeah, and this is your theory, but we're listening. Go ahead. And when do you think insulin should be used?
Well, insulin, usually it's post-workout. You know, a lot of... It depends on the type of insulin that you use. So if you're using... the best one is Humalog to be, you know, the fastest thing. Because,
right.
You know, as long as I said, if you're not a patient, you always want all the hormone to work as fast as it can. So, you know, I recommend taking Humalog post-workout... intramuscular. Mm-hmm. And once you learn that protocol of how, you know, when does it peak and how you can control it and that, you can use it pre-workout.
And what would be the benefit of putting it, using a pre-workout?
Well, you don't deplete the muscle.
Mm-hmm.
You always have, you know, you take that before the training and you got your shake and you drink it through your workout and you have the time, I mean, when you take Humalog, you need to get carbohydrates in your system within like 10 minutes.
Right.
And then constantly have that thing, have a during workout shake, and just, you know, sip on that during your workout, and you'll never get depleted. You know, the pump will always be there. Now, the benefit of insulin is, you know, the pump that you get post-workout, and then you're taking all the nutrition and taking them within the cell. But that happens, when you take a post-workout, that happens when you're already depleted.
But maybe depletion is necessary. Didn't you say you don't want to inhibit the body from doing any of its natural processes?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that is one thing. That's why I use it post-workout. But, you know, there's an option of using it pre-workout as well.
Okay, all right. Well, I buy it.
How many grams of carbohydrates do you recommend per unit of insulin post-workout?
I got a high and low. Per unit, it's between 5 to 10. So what I do is, you know, I start with 10. And 10 grams per unit, and then reduce it to 7, and then reduce it to 5. Because, you know, some people, it differs from person to person where the reaction of insulin. You know, some people take 10 units against 100 grams of carbohydrates, but they become fat.
Right.
And some people take that, and believe me, even with 10 grams, it's not enough for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, your body also produces its own insulin. That's the problem, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, even after taking that, the Humalog effect doesn't stop. I mean, after finishing the shake, within an hour, you got to have another meal, which, you know, my protocol is half of the amount of carbohydrates that you had in your previous meal. So that's like if you were taking, like against 10 units, you took 100 grams of glucose post-workout, then you take a meal which has 50 grams of carbohydrates.
Right.
Even from a complex source, it's okay. With a source of protein, but, you know, in these two meals, I try to eliminate fat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you recommend in the way of growth hormone dosages? How many I use per day?
I recommend not more than 8.
Oh, that's pretty high.
Being 4 twice and being 5 hours apart.
Mm. How expensive is growth hormone in the Middle East? How much do you guys pay per IU?
It depends. I mean, if you know people, you can sometimes get it for free.
Wow.
And if you don't know people, you got to pay around $60 for 15 units. Yeah. Those are the genotropin pens.
Right. That's not that bad, I guess. You know, but not that cheap either.
Yeah.
I like the free $99.
The $3 is better, yeah. what brand would that be that they're selling for $3 a unit?
We get the genotropin and the norditropin.
Wow, that's cheap.
Yeah, that is cheap.
Yeah.
Must be
and they were. I mean, I was shocked that, you know, some guys from Iraq came and they had a lot of growth hormone. And even guys from Iran. And I was asking, like, how do you guys get this? They say, we get them from the UN because they give it to us as an aid because we are a third world country. Can you believe that?
Wow. Probably it's coming from the United States, right? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. I mean, UN is the United States. So.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, well.
So they're getting it as aid.
Now, what are they doing with it? I mean, what are they giving it to them for? I mean, what are they saying it's being used for?
I don't know, but what I know is there was a guy who went to Iran and purchased 1,500 and wanted to take them to Qatar and got confiscated.
Wow. You know what they must be doing, John? All the drugs they must confiscate here from athletes, they ship it over to the Middle East and they give it to them. Here you guys go.
There you go.
Kill yourself over this stuff.
Here's some aid. Here's some U.S. aid.
We're giving you aid. We don't know what to do with it, so we'll just give it to you guys.
Wow.
You
know?
So, who knows?
Who knows?
I guess if you want to get big, you got to go to the Middle East, John.
Yep. Sounds like
or Mexico, right?
Mexico's good too. Yeah, Mexico's great.
No, I think we got better qualities than Mexico.
Yeah. No, you by far
definitely.
You do.
Definitely.
Mexico, we're still using veterinary drugs.
What's the next big show? Are you going to be at the World Championships in October?
It's in November.
Oh, November.
Yeah, it's going to be in Qatar, and I guess I'll make it.
You have to give us a report of what's going on, what happened.
Yeah, and I just wanted to tell John. Last year, John was saying that the ticket to Bahrain is like $2,000, right?
Right.
Because the World Championship was here.
Yeah.
I took a ticket from Bahrain to New York for $800.
Did you really?
Wow, that's cheap.
Yeah.
One way.
Yeah, it was like a 2-hour stop in Doha, which is like a 20-minute flight. And that was it.
No, but was it
non-stop from Doha for like 14 hours to JFK.
But was it a round-trip ticket? Was it going and coming?
Yeah, it was a round-trip. And the ticket that I got from New York to Columbus, Ohio, was actually half of that, which was very expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, maybe Heavy Muscle Radio needs to do a broadcast from Bahrain.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, that'll be great.
We can go visit all the drugstores there.
Yeah, we go shopping.
Ollie could take us to all his favorite spots there.
Load up.
Is bodybuilding very big in where you are?
It's catching up. You know, the thing is that the only sport that we are getting medals from is track and field and bodybuilding.
Right.
So, when we get medals in a sport, the government actually likes that, so they try to champion the whole sport give more money and sign more money with the Ministry of Sports to give to the federations and all, and that's what's happening here. I mean, we got a lot of local shows which are sometimes, you know, there's no prize money or like maybe just a couple $100 for the first place and things like that, but yeah, I mean, even the guys, when they go for like a world championship or like Asian championship, they don't get any money from the show itself, but they get paid from the federation. Like, there are countries that pay, you know, yearly around, let's say, $50,000 just for their expenses, like,
wow,
as a salary. Plus, when they get a gold medal, they end up, like last time there was a guy from Qatar who got, it was like $150,000, yeah.
Wow, not bad.
Just for winning his class, not even the overall. He was not even close to the overall.
Wow. Man, the bodybuilders are in the wrong country. Yeah. Now, how is bodybuilding like in Iraq? I mean, now that, you know, are there bodybuilders actually training there, or is it real bad since the whole U.S. invasion there?
No, they're still training there. I mean, we had guys, because we hosted the Asian Championship in 2004.
Right.
And they had a whole team.
Wow.
They came over here. Cool. And then they went to Qatar. There was a show 2 days after that. They attended that as well. And every year they're coming to the Asian Championships and to the Arab Championships and... They don't go to the world because the world actually gets tested, and they're like always afraid. And there are certain countries that don't go to tested shows.
Right? Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how like all bodybuilders kind of have like this brotherhood? Like, there's no like political lines in bodybuilding. Like, if I ran into an Iraqi bodybuilder, we would sit down and probably talk for 6 hours, you know, about bodybuilding. And if only everyone could get along like that, John. Huh?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
No, but it's not the same. No, it's not like that. They talk about bodybuilding, but nobody discusses about their diet, their cycles, and the way they train. And,
no.
You know, everybody just tries to come. Nobody shares information. I mean, when I came up, I was a guy who just went to the gym because I quit smoking and gained weight. I wanted to just lose some weight. And then I wanted to become muscular, and I wanted to learn about the sport. So as I was learning, I got a lot of information from bodybuilders. But they don't share information between themselves. So then I understood that they were giving me information because I wasn't a threat to them.
You
know,
right.
They were never afraid that, you know, I was going to step on stage one day and beat us. But if two bodybuilders get together, they just say hi and, you know, just talk about anything but bodybuilding.
Right. I'm like you. I give out all the information for free because I think everyone should know the information. It doesn't even matter anyway. Even if they have it, half of them won't follow it anyway, so...
No, believe me, you know, I mean, the articles that I write them here and there, I post a lot of information on GetBig.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people just come up and say, you know, suddenly when I write an information, everyone becomes an expert on GetBig. But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I give away a lot of information and it's for free.
Right.
That's because there's no bodybuilders on GetBig.
You should come on our board and post when there's actually real bodybuilders posting.
Oh, I'll do that, definitely. I'll do that. It's 15 a.m. here, so yeah. Once I get to work, I'll make an account and I'll be there.
You'll at least have some intellectual conversation with some people on Get Big. You're talking to like 13-year-old kids, you know, on there.
Yeah,
so,
living through their mother's basement.
An 80-year-old guy, and then like 60-year-old guys who are still in their mother's basement, exactly.
Right.
So. Yeah, imagine, you know, people were arguing with me that you don't have proof that trenbolone affects the kidney, and everybody said, no, trenbolone is safe. You can take it all year round. I said, okay, well, good luck with that.
These are the guys that weigh 140 pounds, and
right.
They're arguing with you about trenbolone.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then they're on it, and they still can't gain any weight because they eat like twice a day, you know?
They're more concerned with getting pwned.
Ollie, you know, thanks for filling us in on what's going on in the Middle East. You'll have to be our new Middle Eastern correspondent over there. You have to keep us updated. And I definitely want to get some updates from the World Championships when you're out there, so...
Sure, I'll do that, and I'll send you pictures as well. And I'll try to do a play-by-play, but I won't promise you anything, but
yeah,
I'll try my best to do that.
That would be great. I'll make you a thread. We'll stick you at the top, and you could do the play-by-play from the World Championships for us.
Yeah, sure. I'll try to do that.
Maybe we can get a press pass for you, you know, to do that.
You know, you guys get me a press pass for maybe next year's Arnold Classic?
Well, yeah, if you become our correspondent, yeah, I will.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, sure.
All right, good.
I'll
cover
a lot of shows. Any show that happens here, I'll go there. I'll be the paparazzi and the reporter.
You're hired. You're hired right on the air, so no one can say that I didn't live up to my promise to you.
Okay, so I'm boss number three?
Your boss number, that's right. Well, Jeff's boss number 2.5, so I don't know about 3. You gotta earn those stripes.
I'll do that.
All right, Ollie. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ollie.
Thanks for having me.
Well, John, I gotta just tell you, Ollie was a better guest than I even originally imagined. I had spoken to him before, and I know he was pretty well versed in all this bodybuilding jargon and stuff that goes on in the Middle East. But it's good to get a different perspective for once in a while, don't you think?
Yeah, it was great. Too bad. Shipping issues are what they are. I'd like to put in an order, but
that's how you get in trouble.
Yeah, we can't do that shit anymore. So, he was really good and very enlightening in some ways. And I'm glad to see that somebody finally disagreed with you and you had a little lively debate there over a specific issue.
Yeah, and you know, it was friendly too. And
yeah.
You know, he didn't take offense to my opinion. I don't take offense to his opinion. And I like to throw it out there, give the listeners the ability to decide what they want to do.
Exactly.
Now, you know, before we go, I want to just make sure I thank Scott Connolly. And I was talking to him on the phone today, and he actually told me the name of his new book, which I can't reveal to anyone. I was sworn to secrecy, but it's going to be coming out pretty soon, and it's going to be pretty revolutionary. And we're going to be talking about a lot of the principles that he's talking in there about in there. And, you know, it's funny because the Progenics line is really kind of was like a lead-in to get him back into the industry, but he's got a lot more products planned.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's really kind of pissed off, I got to tell you, about this whole Biggest Loser, you know, show. It's really fucking annoying the hell out of him. And, you know, it's always fun to talk to Scott when he's annoyed. He just thinks it's such a crock of bullshit, you know, the way they're having these people lose weight and they're not addressing the dietary needs of these people. Because he said, you know, I'd love to see these people, you know, a year from now.
Sure.
You know, what the hell they look like. Guaranteed they all gain the weight back. And he's right, because they don't teach these people how to eat.
They'll probably gain more back, because that's the hallmark of a starvation diet. Sure. Is when you rebound off of it, your body, you know, after perceiving starvation, goes into back to a survival mode. Mm-hmm. It's going to hoard calories and lay in more body fat than it did previously. So typically, people get fatter and fatter after each round of fad dieting or starvation dieting. So he's right. I love Scott when he's riled up. When he's not pissed off, he's average. When he's pissed off about something, he's a lot more fun to talk to.
Well, his terminology for these people are metabolically fucked. That's exactly what he told me. And you can hear him. You can probably envision him saying that too.
Yeah, he sure can.
And he goes, the truth is that these people need to be treated with thyroid medication.
Sure.
Ephedra, you know, and fat burning, you know, metabolism boosting supplements, because otherwise they're never going to recover their metabolism.
Right.
I mean, he said people are afraid to say this, but this is what needs to be said,
because they're starving them. When you starve somebody and overtax them physically, their body perceives the food supply drying up and goes into a survival mode, right, which is, you know, lowering your metabolic rate.
And you know what? It was funny because I even brought this up to him, and we both agreed. If you give someone 30, 35 grams of protein a meal, you give them, you know, 30 grams of carbs a meal, and you give them 15 grams of fat a meal, and they feed them six times a day, they're not going to be hungry for junk food. It's impossible.
It's impossible.
Most people, if you gave them that diet and told them to eat six meals like that a day, they tell you they can't get all the food in.
Right.
And that's a pretty bad, that's not a bad problem to have if you're on a diet, right?
Well, you know, I think the average is every 3 hours. If you eat every 3 hours and eat a, you know, even if you're doing your diet or a balanced diet, however you want to look at it, that 3 hour interval is just right in line with where your hunger mechanism kicks in, and that's about when you get hungry. If you're not habit eating, I mean, people just sometimes eat to eat. They're not hungry. They're just eating because they have nothing else to do.
Right.
Okay, but if you're really paying attention to what your body's telling you and you eat when you're hungry, that rolls around about every 3 hours. So if you're eating on a plan like that, your metabolism becomes optimal, and that's when you need to eat.
Right. So anyway, we're going to talk about this more on an upcoming episode with him, but he's pissed. That's all I wanted to tell you. And he's got a lot to say, and he can't wait till the TV show. He wants to know when we're going live, too. He's even willing to help us go live. So
let's talk to him about that next week.
We'll be having some big conversations with Scott, and look forward to having a big nutrition show starring the good doctor himself. So that's some good stuff to think about in the future. For now, we're at the end of our whatever hour or many hour show we usually have here. I don't even know what it is, 2-3 hours. And I'd like to thank our guest Stan Efferding and Ali Amini for stopping by. Until next week, remember, with Heavy Muscle Radio,
the truth hurts.
Heavy Muscle Radio is a presentation of RXMuscle.com, the truth in bodybuilding. Tune in next week at the same time for another round with Dave Palumbo and John Romano, only on Heavy Muscle Radio.